This is Radio Romania International. You are listening to our one-hour broadcast in English for listeners in Western Europe and Africa. We can also be heard on the internet at www.ri.ro, Channel 1. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter and other social media platforms. Our programs are also available on TuneIn, Radio Romania International 1, and in Europe via satellite Eutelsat 16A on 11,512 MHz, vertical polarization, azimuth 16 degrees east. We wish you good reception conditions.
Hello, I'm your host Elena Enache, bringing you the news. But first, let's take a quick look at the weather picture. It's warmer than usual for this time of the year, with maximum temperatures of up to 15 degrees Celsius. The noon reading in Bucharest was 11 degrees. And now the news, the headlines. Romgaz, the largest producer and main supplier of natural gas in Romania, has listed its first bond issue on the Bucharest Stock Exchange. Prosecutors in Romania of the European Public Prosecutor's Office are investigating a possible large-scale fraud with community funds, with damage estimated at 2 million euros. And Romanian trade unionists in the energy sector have resumed protest against the new pension law. International investors are showing great interest in the Romgaz bond issue, says CEO Răzvan Popescu. He says the money raised from the listing on the Bucharest Stock Exchange will be used for the company's investment program, especially the strategic Neptune D project in the Black Sea. Romgaz, the largest producer and main supplier of natural gas in Romania, listed its first international corporate bond issue on the Bucharest Stock Exchange on Tuesday, worth 500 million euros. The bonds are also listed on the Luxembourg Stock Exchange. Prosecutors with the Cluj-Napoca office of the European Public Prosecutor's Office are investigating a possible large-scale fraud involving European funds, with an estimated damage of 2 million euros. The case involves three projects to modernize a vegetable farm in Maramureș, in the north. The prosecutor's suspicions concern the use of false, incorrect or incomplete document in order to obtain EU funds for the purchase of a tomato sorting and packaging line and for the installation of photovoltaic panels. According to the investigation, the suspects allegedly forged documents and signatures in order to mislead the authorities. On Tuesday, searches were carried out at the home of a person and at the headquarters of companies targeted by this case. The Romanian Association for Information Security Assurance, in collaboration with the U.S. Embassy in Romania, is organizing on November 20 and 21st a new edition of the CyberCon Romania 2024 International Conference, a landmark event in the field of cybersecurity. The conference takes place at the European Commission representation in Romania and brings together experts from the public, private and academic sectors. According to the organizers, among the topics addressed are current challenges and trends in the field, maintaining resilience for a secure digital infrastructure, improving cooperation between the defense and civilian sectors, the evolution of cyber threats and innovative solutions to combat them, as well as recommended practices to unite cybersecurity and cybercrime prevention. Romanian Trade Union Federation in Energy staged a protest in front of the Ministry of Labour and Social Solidarity offices in Bucharest on Wednesday on the topic of the new pension law, which entered into force on September 1st. According to the trade unionists, the law endangers workers in the integrated nuclear field because it increases the contribution period in their case and sets a minimum age threshold of 45 years for their retirement. A new Russian drone has been found in the north of Chisinau, the capital of the Republic of Moldova, neighboring Ukraine, invaded by Russian troops. According to the National Police, which reported a case, this is the fourth flying object observed on the territory of the Republic of Moldova in recent days. The drone was found on a plot of land located between a shopping center and a stadium by a citizen who alerted the authorities. On Sunday, the Moldovan authorities announced that two Russian missiles had entered the airspace of the Republic of Moldova. This is the first time that a Russian drone has been reported in the airspace of the capital of the Republic of Moldova. And that was the news.
Dear friends, Radio Romania International is again conducting its annual survey among listeners and users of internet and social media, presenting you with a new challenge in 2024, a complicated and difficult year for us all. It was a difficult year due to the conflicts in Ukraine and the Middle East, but also due to global warming, which made 2024 the hottest year in history. It is against this backdrop that we're asking you who has had the most positive impact on the world this year. Based on your options, we will be designated the Personality of the Year 2024 on RI. Please make your nominations accompanied by a short justification, sending your answers to engl@ri.ro or leaving a comment on Facebook or Instagram. The Romanian gas producer Romgaz is listing on the Bucharest Stock Exchange its first issue of bonds worth 500 million euro. More details in this report by Roxana Vasile. On Tuesday, the Romanian company Romgaz launched its first issue of bonds on the local stock market worth 500 million euro. Romgaz is a company where the state is the majority shareholder with 70% share participation. Along with OMV Petrom, Romgaz contributes to the national strategic project Neptune Deep in the Black Sea, which foresees total investments standing at 4 billion euro, half of which must be covered by Romgaz. Total production is estimated at approximately 100 billion cubic meters of natural gas. Recently, Transocean Barents, the huge drilling platform contracted for the Neptune Deep project, arrived on the Black Sea coast in Constanța. Drilling will start in 2025, and the first gas will be exploited in 2027. Meanwhile, the money raised from the bond issue will be used by Romgaz to finance Neptune Deep, but also other goals in the company's investment program. It's worth mentioning in this respect that Romgaz aspires to enter the electricity supply market. Equally, the company seeks to transition to a low-carbon emission operating format. The bonds, also listed on the Luxembourg Stock Exchange since early October, represent only the first installment in a medium-term program that will allow Romgaz to issue bonds with a total value of 1.5 billion euro. Investor interest in these financial instruments is already significant, Romgaz CEO Răzvan Popescu says. However, in addition to important international investors, pension funds and other entities operating in Romania have also invested in Romgaz bond issue to an extent of approximately 20%. The issue was oversubscribed approximately 12 times, with pre-orders of around 6 billion euro having already been submitted, a success praised by Secretary of State in the Prime Minister's office, Mihai Precup.
Eu nu știu să mai fie o emisiune de obligațiuni mai mare.
This, I think, is perhaps the biggest bond issue at the level of Eastern Europe by a state-owned company. In the last 2 years, after Hidroelectrica, today we are witnessing the largest bond listing in the history of Eastern Europe by a state company. A historic day, Mihai Precup said. In turn, the president of the Financial Oversight Authority, Alexandru Petrescu, says Romgaz bond issue contributes to the achievement of Romania's strategic objectives in the field of energy. It is not just another instrument with fixed income. I think it sends a clear message. We are taking an important step in terms of the resilience of the energy sector with a positive impact not only on Romania but on Central and Eastern Europe, Alexandru Petrescu said. The bonds have a maturity of 5 years and a fixed interest rate of 4.75% per year. After 1,000 days of war and facing a difficult winter and great uncertainty, Ukraine says it will never give in to Russia. We continue with this report by Daniela Budu. Representatives of several states, politicians and diplomats conveyed messages of support on the anniversary of 1,000 days since Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine. In this context, leaders of European institutions spoke about the bravery and courage of Kiev. The European Parliament promises the Union will stand by Ukraine as long as it is necessary to achieve a fair peace. The European Parliament held a plenary session where President Volodymyr Zelensky also took part via video conference. The Ukrainian president said that in the absence of European aid, Ukraine would have fallen under Russian occupation. Zelensky thanked the community bloc for its help, which made resistance to Moscow possible, and called on the world to respond strongly to Vladimir Putin's new threats, after the Russian president approved changes to the country's military doctrine, which now calls for a nuclear response in the event of an attack with conventional weapons if backed by a nuclear power. By changing the nuclear doctrine, President Zelensky argues, the Russian president shows that he does not want peace, but that he wants to destroy Ukraine and the whole world. In turn, the armed forces of Ukraine published a message addressing the Ukrainian people, reminding them that, for exactly 1,000 days, the National Army has protected European homes, cities, families, friends, and the future of our children from the large-scale aggression of the Russian Federation. Also to mark 1,000 days of war, a meeting of the European Ministers of Defense was held in Brussels, attended by the NATO Secretary-General Mark Rutte. Officials discussed military aid to Ukraine following the announcement made by the USA, which allowed Kiev to use US-donated weaponry to attack military targets inside Russia. Since the start of the war, European states have donated Ukraine over 130 billion euro, of which 45 billion represented military aid. So far, 67,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been trained in the European Union. On the other hand, to express support for Kiev, 1,000 days after the start of the war, the buildings of the main European institutions, the Commission, the Council and the Parliament, were illuminated on Monday evening in yellow and blue, the national colors of Ukraine. In Bucharest too, the Parliament building was lit yellow and blue, and the flag of the neighboring state was hoisted at the main entrance. Ukraine remains undefeated after 1,000 days of devastating war, the ambassador of the United States in Bucharest, Kathleen Kowalek, told Radio Romania in a message. The US ambassador added that, according to the UN, Russia's aggression in Ukraine has so far killed 11,000 civilians, including over 600 children. Moscow continues to commit shocking war crimes, including torturing civilians and prisoners of war, while Russian bombs have destroyed schools, hospitals and monuments of Ukrainian history, culture and identity, Ambassador Kowalek said. In her message, the official thanked Bucharest for supporting Kiev and reminded that the stakes of the war far exceed the borders of Ukraine, one such example being the incidents on the territory of Romania. And that has wrapped up our newscast.
Focus on Romania.
In the context of marking 1,000 days since Russia launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Radio Romania International's Eugen Cojocariu interviewed Ukraine's ambassador to Bucharest, His Excellency Ihor Prokopchuk.
Your Excellency Ambassador Prokopchuk, which is the secret of the resistance and the resilience of the Ukrainian people during this brutal invasion of Russia?
I think that when looking at the Ukrainian nation, we must remember that 1991, that was the year when the independence of Ukraine was renewed and reestablished. Whereas the aspirations of the Ukrainian nation for their freedom, for their statehood, are very deeply rooted. They can be traced back to the ancient state of Kiev and Rus, and then, of course, the Cossack times, with the leaders that exercise the power of the state leaders. So it is this deeply rooted aspiration for freedom and independence and one's own statehood that I think became a very strong driving force for the fighting spirit and the resistance of Ukrainians. And of course, also a very strong feeling of belonging of the Ukrainian nation to the family of democratic nations. It was in the past years that you know that few so-called revolutions took place. It was the Orange Revolution in 2004, which was mounted by the Ukrainians on the pro-European platform. And then, of course, the Revolution of Dignity of 2013 and 2014, where the Ukrainians spoke with strong resolve about the desire to integrate with the European Union. So I think the combination of these different factors, they played a very significant role in this fierce resistance that was mounted by Ukrainians in the face of the all-out Russian invasion into Ukraine.
Your Excellency, how should the war in Ukraine end in a fair, in a correct way?
I spoke today at the event that the embassy organized that having reached the landmark of 1,000 days since Russia's all-out invasion into Ukraine, we must remember how this war started. And that was an unprovoked, illegal invasion of the Russian forces into Ukraine, where the Russian Federation acted as aggressor and where Ukraine is a victim of aggression. For these 1,000 days, Ukraine has been fiercely fighting, defending its land, its people. And as we move towards reestablishment of peace, Ukraine's vision, Ukraine's role must be of decisive significance in the terms of reestablishment of peace. I must say that no other nation wants peace as Ukrainians do on their own land. And in fact, Ukrainian vision of the peace was formulated in the peace formula that was presented by President Zelensky already 2 years ago. And we continue to advance this vision because we do believe that this is the vision that is strongly anchored in the norms of international law and the norms of the United Nations Charter. And this is a vision for peace that can be also employed in resolving different conflict or crisis situations around the world. It was in June of this year that the first global peace summit was organized and held in Switzerland, and which was attended by over 100 countries and international organizations. What does it say? That this big number of countries and international organizations, they share this vision because it rests on the United Nations Charter. Since then, we have organized thematic conferences on each of the points contained in the peace formula. The most recent ones of these conferences was held in Canada, and it was devoted to humanitarian aspects of reestablishment of peace, and that is the return of prisoners of war, of civilians who are held in Russian captivity, and of children who were forcefully deported to the Russian Federation and who undergo a very serious mistreatment in the hands of the occupiers. So for us, the vision of peace is clear. This is the peace that would fully respect sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine within its internationally recognized borders, and that will be embedded in the norms of international law and the United Nations Charter.
And my last question, Your Excellency, which is the importance of the support given from the very beginning of the war by Romania to the Ukrainian people and to Ukraine?
Romania has played an important role in assisting Ukraine to deal with numerous challenges that were stemming from the Russian aggression. Probably first, I would point out to the humanitarian aspect of this assistance, because it was on the first day after the Russian all-out invasion into Ukraine that millions of Ukrainians started to move across the territory of my country and seek refuge. Many of them found safety on the Ukrainian territory, but it was also millions who were forced to leave the territory of the country, cross the border, and find safety in other countries. Millions of Ukrainians moved across the territory of Romania. Some of them stayed here. Many of them moved further on into Europe. And those who stayed here, and I know from my meetings with the Ukrainians, they very much appreciate the empathy that was displayed by Romanians when they were receiving them. It was the food, accommodation, various kinds of services that were offered by Romanians to fleeing Ukrainians. And that was assistance that was demonstrated and extended on the government level, on the level of non-governmental organizations and private citizens who were simply going to the train stations to meet Ukrainians and offering them help. This was a transformational period, in fact, not only in terms of the people-to-people context, but also kind of in relationship between the two states. And this transformation continues until now. I'm very pleased to say that we have witnessed a very intensive period of bilateral contacts. Last year, President Zelensky visited Bucharest, where he particularly expressed gratitude for the assistance that was provided to Ukraine until that time. Assistance continued. And speaking today, I would particularly want to express gratitude for the donation of the Patriot system that took place this year. Ukraine is in great need of air defense capability, and this donation that was done to Ukraine definitely helps to save lives in Ukraine amidst ongoing heavy shelling that is being conducted by the Russian forces.
Дякую, слава Україні.
Героям слава.
You are listening to Radio Romania International.
Society Today.
Welcome to Society Today. I'm Cristina Matescu. According to the latest survey conducted by the Center for the Comparative Migration Studies, a little over 200,000 foreign citizens were living in Romania at the end of October 2023, 87% of whom were holders of temporary residence permits. With a rejection rate of humanitarian protection applications of over 83%, the latter makes up for the least numerous group among foreign citizens living in Romania. Due to the many opportunities it provides in terms of employment, education and leisure, the capital city Bucharest accounts for 26% of the total number of foreign citizens in Romania, followed by Ilfov County with 10%, Timiș County in the west with 7%, Cluj County in the northwest with 6%, and Constanța County in the southeast also with 6%. The survey also shows that Nepali citizenship is the most numerous, accounting for 9%, followed by Turkish with 8%, and Italian, Sri Lankan, and Moldovan with 7% each. While Italian, Turkish, and Moldovan labor migration is the result of historical links and cultural and economic similarities, South Asian migration is the result of labor agreements and is yet little or insufficiently studied and understood. A survey entitled Bridging Communities, an exploratory study on labor migration in Romania, has analyzed in detail the rights of Asian workers and their working and living conditions and to what extent these are respected. According to the Romanian Labour Code, immigrant workers should enjoy the same rights, working conditions, rest periods, social benefits, wages and protections against discrimination as Romanian citizens. However, researchers found out that workplace exploitation is the most frequently cited issue and which has a major impact on the decision to re-migrate to other countries. Among the jobs most vulnerable to potential exploitation and rights violations are those of food delivery courier and kitchen worker. The risk of exploitation is even greater for those without valid work permits, for example, the people waiting for the necessary documents to be issued. Anatolie Koshchuk, the coordinator of the study, believes that the state institutions should verify and ensure compliance with the legislation, including the rules related to the necessary qualifications and skills of foreign workers.
Dacă te-ai uitat pe lista de la IGI, trebuie să dovedească niște chestii. Ori o diplomă în domeniul în care vin, ori un test practic. Sunt câteva lucruri care clar nu...
According to the General Inspectorate for Immigration, workers must prove a number of things. Either a qualification in their field or passing a practical test. There are a few things that clearly don't work. One of them is mastery of the language. They must know Romanian or an international language, and this is not always the case. They just give a statement that they know, but we should have a practical test. Very often we see people come in and they don't know or have no qualifications in that specific area. which is unthinkable for countries like Germany, where this aspect is state-owned and over-controlled. You're not allowed to bring in a worker who has to weld and doesn't know how to weld. And there are a few other things, for example, healthcare. The responsibility lies with the companies that bring the workers in, but they must be supervised, that is, they must be clearly controlled by public authorities in various forms. They should lose the right to bring in labour from now on, if they fail to respect the rules. One aspect we know even less about when it comes to foreign workers is how they spend their free time, what music they listen to, where they hang out, and what small businesses owned by other members of their communities facilitate their meeting together. In October, for example, a well-known performance venue in Bucharest, known as Arenele Romane, the Roman Arenas, hosted a concert by the most popular band in Sri Lanka. It was a big success, with people coming from all corners of Romania, from cities as far away as Arad in the west of the country. Similarly, a recently opened restaurant in the Pantelimon area of Bucharest has become a meeting and hangout place for the Sri Lankans living in the Romanian capital. The restaurant is owned by a young couple who arrived in Romania on work visas, aware of their community's need for a place that represents their culture. In addition to traditional food, the restaurant hosts electronic music events, inviting DJs from the local Sri Lankan community and musicians from around Europe. We often forget that recent arrivals bring with them more than labor. They bring music, cuisine, local businesses, a different lifestyle and a way of being that slowly make their way and strengthen the community and ultimately enrich the host culture. And that was Society Today.
Next in this program, sports.
Welcome to Radio Romania International Sports Club. I'm Eugen Nastan. Matches counting towards the final round as part of this year's edition of the Champions League in women's handball were played late last week. On Saturday and Sunday, all three Romanian teams sustained defeats in their Champions League fixtures. In Group A in Denmark, Gloria Bistrița-Năsăud were defeated by Nykøbing Falster 24-32, while CSM Bucharest lost to Ferencváros Budapest 28-31. According to Group A rankings, CSM are fourth placed, while Gloria seventh. In Group B, Rapid played a home match against Hungarian side Győr, sustaining a 25-28 defeat and retaining its seventh place in the group. Matches counting towards the league's ninth round will be played in January 2025. On Saturday, January the 11th, Gloria take on Norway's Storhamar at home, or Rapid Bucharest face Brest-Bretagne away. In FCSM Bucharest, Rapid are pitted against Group A leader Metzon Bal. After 14 rounds as part of the league's group phase, the first two teams in each group advance to the quarterfinals. Third, fourth, fifth and sixth place teams will engage in playoff confrontations for a place in the quarterfinals. Seventh and eighth place teams will no longer participate in the league. EHF European League's group phase also starts in January. Two Romanian teams take part in the competition. Dunărea Brăila have been distributed in this phase of the competition by default, while SCM Râmnicu-Vâlcea went past the preliminary rounds. SCSM, this past Sunday, grabbed a decisive win against Hungary's Debrecen 31-28 away. The fixture counted towards the third preliminary round's second leg. We recall SCM also won the first leg a week ago on home turf 33-31. jointly hosted by Hungary, Austria and Switzerland, the European Championship throws off in late November, so the inter-club competitions go into recess. Alongside Montenegro, Serbia and the Czech Republic, Romania has been included in Group B and will play its matches in Debrecen. Romania will first play the Czech Republic on Friday, November the 29th. On December the 1st, Romania take on Montenegro, while on December the 3rd, our national squad face Serbia. Taking part in the final tournament are 14 teams divided into 6 groups. The first 2 teams in each group play the main phase, while they will be divided into 2 groups of 6 teams each. The first 2 teams in the 2 main groups advance to the semis. Until then, Romania's national squad will prove its mettle in the Golden League friendly tournament to be hosted by the Danish town of Viborg. The national team will play 3 test matches. On Thursday, they will take on the Netherlands. On Saturday, the Romanians play Denmark, while on Sunday, the Romanian national team go against Norway. The national squad will then return to Romania for a centralized training stage in Oradea. And that's all from Sports Today. You can also access our sports items at rri.ro. And on Facebook.
You are listening to Radio Romania International.
Next in the broadcast, time for our folk music segment, Truly Romanian. I'm Vlad Palcu, today inviting you to discover the repertoire of Maria Cornescu, an exceptional vocalist from Oltenia, southern Romania. Let's listen to her first with a satirical song.
Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos pe lume. Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos în lume. Îi plac lungile cu flori să joace la sărbători. Îi plac lungile cu flori să joace la sărbători. Sârbem între tinerești și horele bătrânești, să le joace, să le cânte lumea întreagă, să le asculte. Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos în lume. Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos în lume. Și dorul mi-s dragi codrii din Carpați și-mi când dragostea de frați. Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos în lume. Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos în lume. Că și eu româncă sunt în țărașării pământ. Întreb inima și-mi spune unde-i mai frumos în lume.
Maria Cornescu was born November 20, 1945, into an ordinary family in Craiova. She fell in love with folk music at a very young age and devoted her life to music. At 18 years of age, she got hired as a vocalist with the Nicolae Bălcescu Folk Ensemble in Craiova. At 20, she made her first recordings with Radio Bucharest, basically shooting her to fame. Her recordings enjoyed such widespread popularity that she quickly became a regular guest in all the best-known festivals and related events around the country. Listen to her next with a dance tune.
Ooh, she yarrow.
nei cuța în cale, pe drumeagul de pe vale, cu Batista cu bomboane, cu Batista cu bomboane. Cu bomboane și alvită, vine ca să-i dau guriță, cu bomboane și alvită, vine ca să-i dau guriță. Trei migdale, firea-n naibii de alumare, cu gorunul din cărare, multă dragoste mai are. Dragostea bătuar vina, numai ea e cu pricina. Dragostea bătuar focul, că nu-și mai găsește locul. Dragostea bătuar focul, că nu-și mai găsește locul. Pe malugilor tului, unde-am hăulit întâi, hăulez gorjencele, de răsună văile, hăulez toate cu foc, de stăgilor tu pe loc. Hăulez și eu cu ele, am în suflet doruri grele, că-s gorjancă din ucet și mi-arde inima-n piept.
After 9 years spent in Craiova, Maria Cornescu moved to the Romanian Rhapsody Folk Ensemble in Bucharest. While in the capital city, she started collecting old fiddler's songs, first talking to instrumentalists, picking up their tunes, and later writing lyrics. She released her first album in 1971 at Electrecord label, and from this album we've picked for you a love song. And we go out with one last song from the repertoire of Maria Cornescu.
Unde duci mai puișor? La Craiova. Eva Smansor.
Te duci mai cuișor
la Craiova Smansor, că aici fetele nu vor, că au aflat că sunt dator. Datorie cu împrumut, n-am de un să-i dau mai mult. Lasă știe, lasă știe, mai una-mi place mie. Lasă știe, lasă știe, mai una-mi place mie. Care m-a făcut dator și-acum nu pot să mă-nsor. Care m-a făcut dator și-acum nu pot să mă-nsor.
Living Romania.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Happening in Romania. Today we have an interview with Ambassador Spiros Lamridis, taken by our own boss of Radio Romania International, Eugen Coșocariu.
Ambassador Lamridis, hello, welcome to Bucharest. I'm very glad to meet you. My first question, you are the special envoy for Ukraine from Greece. Which are your main tasks?
Well, Mr. Coșocariu, it's my pleasure to be with you and with the people that will listen to us. My main task is, as many other countries in the European Union and in the Alliance of the Democracies for Ukraine, coordinating the various actions of my country vis-a-vis Ukraine, both in the reconstruction and also in the representation of various fora where the issues concerning Ukraine are being raised. For instance, next Monday I'm going to Montreal, where there's a big conference on the issue of internally displaced persons, abducted children, and also prisoners of war. I was in the mining conference the other day. So, in short, I'm the person who, let's say, represents Greece when Ukraine has been discussed in more or less all parts of activities.
Ambassador, what are your goals? Which is your message here in Bucharest at the Aspen GMF Bucharest Forum?
Mr. Coșocariu, first of all, I'm honored to be this very prestigious gathering. And the message is what the Congress itself wants to show, that the issue of Ukraine is not being forgotten, that the West is not tired of helping the aggressed party, which is obviously Ukraine, and that finally law and order, international values have to prevail. And that's why we are with Ukraine from moment one, and we will be with her as long as it takes, because justice, the respect of sovereignty, territorial integrity, and democracy in a country for us is not negotiable. So the message is this. First of all, we have to be sure that Ukraine will be reconstructed and will be a country powerful and prospering as it deserves. But in order to arrive at that point, we have to have a Ukraine. Therefore, at this point, our effort is concentrating in helping Ukraine fight off this horrendous aggression from the Russian Federation. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Your Excellency, what can NATO and the European Union still do to help more Ukraine against Russia?
The main issue, Mr. Coșocariu, is what I said before, that there is this rumor that sometimes, of course, it's fake news directed from very specific sources, that the West in general, and more particular, as you mentioned, the main two big organizations, the EU and NATO, are tired of help in and are lower in their defenses vis-a-vis Ukraine, therefore not helping enough or not wanting to help enough. That's an absolute lie. NATO, the EU, and practically the countries that are being represented there, because as you know very well, NATO itself is not involved in this conflict, as the Russians claim. This is not a war between NATO and Russia. I mean, this is not that. But the countries, the democracies that are in NATO and in the EU, we are there and we're going to do as much as it takes continuously to support Ukraine. As you know, financially, there is the EU-Ukraine facility regulation, which involves enormous amounts of sums of money, and it's going to be replaced by a new fund now for the next 4 years. And NATO, of course, after the Washington conference, the summit in Washington, have decided on a series of steps beefing up the practical and moral help to Ukraine. And you know those steps. More training, more indirect help for humanitarian, non-lethal and lethal help through the countries. Of course, again, I repeat, NATO itself is not involved. And of course, bigger representation of administrative nature in Kiev itself with an office of NATO. So there's a lot being going on, and there will be even more. We will run the course as long as it takes.
Ambassador Lambridis, how could the end of the war in Ukraine look like in the most realistic scenario?
Realistic scenario or idealistic scenario, we don't want to see any scenario that in the name of realism will sacrifice either people or territories or dignity of Ukraine. Therefore, the final peace formula that will prevail at the end of the day, because there will be an end to the war, there's no war that lasts forever, should be based on what the United Nations resolution and what the international law foresees. Therefore, full territorial integrity and sovereignty for Ukraine, and of course, full rights for the peoples of all the regions involved, regardless of their origin or their language spoken. Human lives and human dignity and human evolution to progress has to be respected for all communities. And you understand very well what I mean. The people in Crimea or in Donbass that believe that they have to have some kind of rights and all that should be respected. There's no question about that. But that cannot be done at the expenses of maiming a whole country like Ukraine, cutting off parts of it, or doubting its sovereignty.
Ambassador, Russia declares that the presence of NATO soldiers on the ground in Ukraine would be a severe escalation of the war. What about the alleged participation of North Korean soldiers and maybe African soldiers on Russia's side? This would be not a severe escalation?
It would be, but the Western countries, let's say, we're more serious and meticulous in what we state. We don't state things just because they're being mentioned in the social media. We don't have proof of participation, numbers, at least big numbers, of African soldiers or North Korean soldiers. Therefore, we don't comment on these things. We believe that this is an aggression by Russia, could be indirectly helped by other regimes of the same nature as Russia. And we know very well that it's been receiving armaments and missiles from Iran and other sources. But it doesn't mean that North Korea or African countries are directly involved in this conflict. Therefore, we don't comment it. Now, as for the comments of Russia that NATO troops, if present in Ukraine, would be a severe escalation. This is totally hypothetical and theoretical because there are no European, NATO or other troops on the Ukrainian soldier. The fact that we do train openly Ukrainian armed forces in other countries neighboring, that is something that's part of the overall help that we want to give to Ukraine. But nothing is going on within Ukraine itself.
I stay in the same area. Sending American and European weapons and ammunition in Ukraine is not legitimate according to Moscow. Using Iranian and North Korean weapons, ammunition and electronic components coming from China is legitimate?
I think in a very nice way you answered your own question. Of course it's not legitimate. All these countries that you mentioned and all this basic weaponry that is entered in Russia is very well received and very welcomed by Russia. What do they expect? That we leave Ukraine to fight with spears and arrows? Of course we help Ukraine to protect itself and to defend itself. It's our obligation. There are agreements between countries of the West and Ukraine. Actually, lately we also signed a bilateral agreement, a security reconstruction with Ukraine. Therefore, we do help Ukraine and we'll continue to do so. It's natural. We're helping someone who's been aggressed. It's Article 51 of the United Nations Charters. It's our obligation, moral and practical, and we're proud of doing so.
Ambassador, how could the Western nations better fight against Russian propaganda, fake news, misinformation, disinformation?
This is a more general question of how the very open and very free society of the West deals with the information that is coming from every source nowadays, legitimate, non-legitimate, true, credible, non-credible, fake news, non-fake news. So I believe that the average person in the West should primarily himself or herself be in a position to understand what they want to absorb as news, be serious about it, and dilute and digest better what is being overwhelmingly coming every day to our ears or to our eyes under the form of information. Many, many times this information is fake. There's a whole, as you know, industry of propaganda coming from dubious sources. Now you mentioned Russia. I could mention to you a few years ago a more horrendous source, which was ISIS. Mm-hmm. And then, as you remember, the members of the Caliphate were claiming that we're about to conquer the half of Europe. So we should be, as citizens, as responsible citizens and educated people, more attentive to what we listen to. As a matter of fact, when we come to states and government institutions in the West, we are doing our part to be able to defend ourselves from these situations. On the other hand, we cannot do censorship to media because this is what we represent, a free right of speech and a free democracy where anyone can say whatever he wants. On the other hand, we should be able, again, as citizens, to judge what we absorb and what we reject.
And to conclude the interview, which could be the scenarios of the European security order after the end of the war in Ukraine? Ambassador Spiros Alambridis.
This is, for me, a source of optimism, probably naive optimism, but, you know, as a student and as a postgraduate student, I was always on the side of the idealists of the international relations. I'm not in favor of the realists, although they say that they usually persevere and they are the ones who are winning these ideological battles. So for me, the future peaceful architecture of Europe should include Russia. Russia is a European state. It should not be excluded. But in order to achieve that, it should be Russia itself and the regime in the Kremlin that understands that with this kind of behavior, it excludes itself from the family of civilized European nations. We would be with open arms expecting a Russia that would accept democratic values, the sovereignty of others, the independence of others, respect everyone else so that everyone else can respect Russia and included in a peaceful general architecture of Europe. We have so many bigger problems in the world than the actual fallacies of recreating autocratic regimes through revision and new empires. And unfortunately, Putin is not the only one putting these kind of crazy dreams around. You know other people who also claim that they have to restore older empires. This is wrong. The planet is calling for our attention. The climate is changing. There are mass movements of people that have to flee their countries because it's unlivable. So we have all these warnings around us, and still we're dealing with one person this time that is leading a whole nation to a very wrong direction and giving a very bad example to other leaders that might follow the similar path. Therefore, Russia should not prevail because it would be a very bad example for where the international world order is going.
Ambassador, a big thank you. Ευχαριστώ πολύ.
Focus on Romania. Coming up next on Radio Romania International. Simply Folk.
Welcome everyone to a new edition of Simply Folk. I'm Vlad Palcu. Known as the Nightingale from Banat, Mariana Draghicescu was one of the best known and appreciated folk vocalists in her native region Banat in western Romania. The artist was born in Bogoltin village in Caraș-Severin County on September 18, 1952, and passed away at only 45 years of age on April 3, 1997 in Toronto, Canada. As a young girl, she developed a passion for music, taking after her grandfather who played the flute. And at around 4 or 5 years of age, she started singing the songs of Maria Tănase and Maria Lătărețu. Her first appearance on stage was in Prișanina at the age of 8 at a school celebration in 1960, when she received a standing ovation. Mariana Draghicescu made her debut together with the Lazar Cernescu Folk Music Orchestra from Caransebeș, which instantly became a real hit. Despite her radio success, the song was censored by the communist authorities of the time. After her death in 1998, the Mariana Draghicescu Cultural Association was founded, which organizes a national competition devoted to folk music in Timișoara. Our pick for today's program is a love song from the repertoire of Mariana Draghicescu.
Muzica la 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 la. Că nimic lumii nu cred, numai ochii să ți-i văd, măi.
And with that, our broadcast in English for listeners in Western Europe and Africa has come to an end. You can listen to our next program for Western Europe at 18 hours UTC on 11630 kHz in the DRM system. Listeners in Africa can receive our programs tomorrow at 12 hours UTC on 21470 kHz. We can also be heard on the internet at www.rri.ro, channel 1. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write an email at engl@rri.ro. Goodbye.